With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. We're gonna save the world tonight. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you are kicking into the week's affairs and not having too much of a struggle with it being a Monday. Well, where do I start today? As you know, I always try and get a bit of current news into play before we announce today's guest. I'm really excited about talking to our guest today. He's been a friend for years now. We haven't actually chatted in detail for a long time, but we have seen each other many times. So I'm looking forward to having our conversation, but I'll tell you about that in a minute. Before I do that, the news story today. Now, this went up onto mygreenpod.com. It's a breaking story. The title is Ending Energy Greenwash. Now, we all know what greenwash means. If you've been following the show, we all know how important energy is. And this story actually links quite nicely to today's guest. Not directly, but definitely indirectly. So the story goes on to say this: good energy provides soil association with groundbreaking new clean power matching initiative, which is offering game-changing levels of transparency. Now, what does that all mean? So it goes on to say, a Bristol-based environmental charity has signed up to a groundbreaking new way of sourcing its energy and demonstrating its commitment to a more sustainable future. The Soil Association is one of the first good energy business customers to use hourly matching, providing unprecedented levels of detail on how its power is matched on an hourly basis with renewable sources such as solar farms. The information helps businesses to understand how their power is generated and simplifies carbon reporting by providing game-changing levels of transparency, transforming the fight against greenwashing. Now, the Soil Association explains that the difference it has made in a new good energy film, which features Leeway's packaging services near Gloucester, whose solar panels provide some of the electricity used. Good Energy is the first UK energy supplier to share hourly energy matching data with its larger business customers. Now, this is significant because obviously if you know what you're using on an hourly basis, you're able to then monitor and track much more succinctly. So you're able to then reduce certain usages at certain times, look at alternative energy resources at certain times, and also, most importantly, know when you are having a greater impact on the grid, which is what this is all about. Now, customers who use an online platform provided in partnership with Granular Energy to see which generators are supplying their renewable electricity with daily, weekly and monthly trends showing when their matching is highest. This allows business to slash their carbon emissions by shifting their usage to times of higher renewable power generation. So that's the key to this. Now, the chief exec of Good Energy said, To build a zero carbon grid that's free from polluting and expensive fossil fuels, which is, of course, the addiction that we're trying to alleviate ourselves from, these fossil fueled energy sources, we have to get better at using renewable electricity as it's generated and storing it from when it's for when it's needed. Hourly matching provides business owners with a truly transparent insights into how they're powering their operations and how they can be more sustainable. It's the future of renewable energy. To use in the UK will play a key role in supporting the transition to a cleaner and greener economy. That's by Nigel Pocklington. Now, grid energy are 100% renewable energy source. They very much rely on micro generation, which is solar power generation, from solar farms, big ones, and also, if you like, smaller community-based generation farms. So they're one of the largest generators of solar power in this particular way. So the fact that they've now got this technology is obviously going to help them redefine their relationships with business customers, which is key because obviously businesses have a much greater usage. Now, that's today's news. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to read a little bit more about that, do go to mygreenpod.com. There's a new story up there every day. You can subscribe. You can subscribe for free and also receive a copy of our magazine, all discounts, competitions, etc., etc. So here we are. This brings me nicely to today's guest. Now, the reason why today's guest is so significant to that particular news piece is, number one, he's based in Bristol. Number two, I know that their farm adopted this type of usage of electricity way back in the day. So we can perhaps talk a little bit about that. They're very, very key in sustainability, in regenerative and organic farming, and just, absolutely diamond business that we will all know. Welcome to the show, Mr. Tim Mead, actually, owner, farmer. Family owner, a farmer of Yeo Valley. So I'm sure you've all tasted some Yeo Valley milk and Yeo Valley yogurts. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning, Jo. Oh, good afternoon, Jarvis. Good to be with
Good
you.
afternoon. Yeah, just afternoon. Were you up at the crack of dawn this morning, Tim? Are you still doing your farming?
I'll tell you what, it gets light at 5 o'clock in the morning now. So when it gets light is when farmers, tend to get out and get active. So I was out this morning looking at the cows going out into the new grazing lays.
So is that your kind of 5 o'clock wake up call? You get up and go out and check on the cows, make sure they're all still alive and happy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, I mean, I was 40 years a yogurt maker. Now I'm an aspiring farmer. So my career was, I became an accountant. Then I was a yogurt maker for 40 years. The Yeo Valley brand's been around for 30 years. And now is my time to sort of get my knowledge in about farming and how it works. And so it's sort of retirement, but it's semi-retirement because I don't think farmers ever retire.
Yeah, well, I live in a farming community, as you know, up in North Yorkshire, and so I can absolutely relate to that and understand it. It's a 24/7 job. Christmas Day, any birthday, you still have to be out doing the same thing. Let's get into the farming, but before we do that, Tim, 30 years Yeo Valley has been a brand or
An
farmer,
organic brand,
an
yeah.
organic brand. Okay, so you, just tell me a little bit about that. What was it like growing up on an organic farm, back in the day for you, because presumably you were farming before you came the brand, so you grew up in that environment, right?
Yeah, my parents, bought a farm when in their sort of early 20s with a mortgage from the NFU. And so I guess the first, that was 1961. So the first, I was born in 1963. I wasn't around in 1961. But for the first 10 years, I guess my parents were aspiring to make a living by producing milk and beef and sheep and corn and apples on the farm. And it became apparent that that was going to be a really difficult way to make a living. So they got into trying to add value to the product beyond the farm gate. And that really took us into to yogurt making in about 1972. So the early days, my first sort of 7 or 8 years on the farm, it was just, living on a farm and helping out, with all the animals and the crops and everything like that, picking the apples in the harvest time. And then, it was about trying to find a way of adding value to to the products, and we landed on yogurt. And then basically that, from 1972, we've been a yogurt maker. And the certification of the organicness happened around 1994, I guess, and that coincided with various other events, and we decided to go the full hog and certify as organic in 1994.
Right, so there's two things I want to focus on there. There's the farming bit itself and the organic nature, but we will come to that definitely. So, if I remember rightly, your mum, Mary Mead, is a bit of a legend in the farming world. Just give us a bit of background on what she did in order to try and solve some of the issues around farming, and then how you took on that legacy and turned it into this amazing, wonderful, beautiful organic brand that we have today.
Well, I guess really in the early days, I mean, our mum was a mum, and she took us to school, cooked us, washed us, and all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, in 1990, my father was killed in a tractor accident on the farm.
Yes.
And then, that was, obviously that's a family crisis, and it's like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
And we were very clear. I was a qualified accountant, and my job was to run a manufacturing business and pay her for her milk that she was producing on the farm. She said that she would retrain as a farmer because she'd originally been a nurse and a mother and things, and therefore we sort of divided up the responsibilities. She would look after the farming and I would look after the manufacturing business. And today she still comes in the office 2 or 3 days a week. She individually breeds all the cows, selecting the families of cows and the bulls that she wants them to sort of create the diverse genetics going forward for that make a really healthy herd of cows.
Okay, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, that's right. She's well respected, isn't she, for understanding and certain breeds. That's it. I remember now. Thank you for that. So you got into the business. You came in with your, well, I guess with your money head on, with a kind of, the accountancy, which is a great stable part of running a business. In fact, the most important part. But also, obviously, you need the product and everything else. So what was it like when you came in? Like, how did you? I mean, first of all, everybody that's listening, it's good to know that Tim, when you came in, you turned the business around from, a relatively, small to medium sized business to being, a multi-million pound business now. What was it that you saw, and what did you, why did you focus on the organic side of things? Why was that important to you?
I think for me, it was about, so in 1960, there was about 180,000 dairy farmers, producing milk, on their farms, mixed integrated livestock. So the livestock would build the fertility, you'd grow some wheat and some barley, and you'd have some cows and some sheep and some beef and probably orchards. And it became, and today there's only 8,000 dairy farmers, so we've lost 95% of all the places in the country that used to produce milk in a more of a sort of biological farming system, agroecology system. And over time, it became apparent that, we were introducing more physics and more chemistry into the production of food on farm. And I guess our support and determination to get into organic was probably more about the size of the farms and the communities that you'd support than it was about the strict standards of what you can and can't do. So it was much more community. The driving force for me was, why can't a dairy farm with 150 cows, which is a two-person operation, commercially exist to produce really great nutritious food? And the inexhaustible drive towards bigger and bigger and bigger and introducing more and more chemicals, et cetera, just felt instinctively wrong. And therefore, our support for the organic sector was more about the structural size and nature. Because if so in organic dairy farming, you have to get 60% of all of the feed for your cows from forage and grass, which is obviously means that they're going to live a much more natural life. They're going to graze the fields, and you can't just put them in a shed and feed them with lots and lots of bought-in material from anywhere around the world. So it was more of a structural feeling that it was the right direction for agriculture.
And that's is that I mean, presumably that's like the kind of most natural way to farm anyway, until big industry, mass produced factory farming kind of got in play. Is that fair comment for those of us that are a bit ignorant to the industry?
Yes, and I guess we're learning an awful lot. Regenerative farming is like everywhere you read now in the farming press, it's all about regenerative farming. So once upon a time, all food was produced biologically. So you'd wander through, you'd pick an apple, something would, there'd be wild animals. So before farming, all of the food that was produced was just the product of the biological system of nature doing what it does. Okay. And then back 10,000 years ago, we started turning the soil and planting much more concentrated crops in certain areas. So if you wanted to make bread, to go off and pick all the ears of wheat randomly across the countryside would have been, too much of a sort of job to do. So we started turning the soil and planting grains and growing those grains, which were then turn into flour for bread or for feed for cattle. So at one point, it was purely biological. We then introduced a huge amount of physics into farming, ploughing, tilling, and that sort of stuff. And then, because of the concentration of crops that we were growing, we needed to introduce chemicals to stop the disease buildups, et cetera, et cetera. And then we started introducing artificial fertilizer, which meant that we could continue to grow crops in areas where the soil was being depleted of the nutrients. So that whole process of going from purely biological to a mainly physical and chemistry, operation sort of needs to get reversed. And that is the main function of organic farming, is to go back and rely on the life in the soil to generate the nutrients and the fertility, to produce the food, as opposed to introducing the chemistry set. And we've sort of done the same thing in food. We've taken lots of different types of food and introduced physics and chemistry. So the first physical thing that happened to food was really we started cooking meat, and that then, gave us all the nutrients to basically propel the human race probably to the sort of, I guess some people would say that we're the most intelligent species. At times you doubt that really. But things like the availability of dense nutritional food obviously helped that. So in food production, luckily for us, the ultra processed food debate is now really, starting to be had across the nation, because that's the ultimate, shooting yourself in the foot, feeding the whole population with things that's going to make them sick. So whether it was in agriculture, physics and chemistry sort of took over, the same in food production, and we need to go back to the thing that created all of fertility in the world, which is the natural soil life and that biological process.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I mean, that's such a really clearly understandable, defined scenario for us to get our heads around. I really appreciate that because I know our listeners will too. Because, it's not every day you get to speak to an expert farmer that's really part of a movement and has been pioneering.
Aspiring farmer, Jarvis, aspiring farmer.
Well, you're certainly an expert in the dairy production, in the cows. I want to talk to you about soil because I know soil. I remember reading somewhere a few years ago. We're going to have to cut to a commercial break, Tim, but I'm going to ask this question. Have a think about it, and then when we come back after the break, you can tell me your answer. But I remember reading that we potentially have only between 50 and 100 food harvests left in our soil. So that was the kind of statistic that came up that I'm pretty sure I'm quoting it roughly about right. The figures were anywhere between 50 and 200, something like that, which in the grand scheme of things is not very long. So we're going to cut to a commercial break. I'm going to come back to you, Tim, and ask you what your response is about, how many harvests do you think we actually do have in the soils, and what can we do to, as a customer, to support them to regenerate. So back to you in a second.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith, Lean Into Clean. I'm here with Tim Mead, organic dairy businessman, becoming farmer owner of Yo Valley, the product that brand that we all love. I remember that video, Tim, that Yo Valley made back in the day, the rapping farmers, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I did just leave you with a hanging question about soils. The information that I quoted, and I quote me if I'm wrong, but I think I read that there'll be between 50 and possibly 200 harvests left in the world's food system. But is that information, is that scaremonger tactics? What does that actually mean anything?
Yes, I mean, I think it depends on where you are in the world and how land has been farmed. But effectively, soil is a combination of inert rock washings, water, air, organic matter, carbon, and microbes. Okay, so the soil before we had soil on the world, the plant started sequestering carbon into the soil. And the fertility of the world has been built by the relationship between plants and herbivores eating the planet and then recycling and building those carbon stocks of the soil. What we've done is we've taken huge tracts of the world and taken that really fertile, live biological soil and treated it as a substrate and then just put chemicals and artificial fertilizer onto it. Which, in the process of doing that, you're losing the carbon content of the soil. And it is carbon, if you take a bit of charcoal and, it weighs about, I don't know, a kilo works about 200 grams, you soak it in water and it absorbs all that water. So if you don't have carbon in soil, you end up with dust and dust blows away. And that is why, they're saying that if we continue to deplete the world's carbon stocks in soil, then the soil will not be able to produce any food, and it will just become dust and it will become desert. And therefore, what biological farming does is the integration of large herbivores onto the land, growing grass, creating fertility, and then using some of that land to then grow the crops. We need to return to a integrated livestock farming system where we're using the sun's energy to capture that into the grasses, to pump the sugars into the soil, to allow the microbes in the soil to consume the sugars, and therefore remaining the leaving the carbon in the soil. And if we get to that level, we can start to put back some of the carbon that's been lost from the soils of the world, and then they will become biologically productive, and we'll be able to produce food, for the future.
For the future generations, yeah. So, how far away are we from that kind of destabilizing process? I mean, you're doing it, your network's doing it. There's a wider network happening now in the UK. I suppose America are not doing it, are they? Because I suppose there's very different farming practices and laws there.
Bizarrely, that's not really the case. So,
Okay.
organic farming is the gold standard of regenerative farming.
Yeah.
And the Yo Valley definition of regenerative farming is that you're regenerating the carbon soil stocks of the soil. Okay.
Yeah.
In
Yeah.
certain parts of America, where they have degenerated their soil carbon to such a level, when the runway stops, you've got to start regenerating. So, there are huge amounts of America that is really getting into regenerative farming because they have no option. So
Got
when there
it.
is nothing left in the soil won't produce the harvest. And then if you want to farm that land, you've got to start using regenerative farming practices to rebuild the biological sort of ability of that soil to provide, So soil holds rough levels, and there's lots of differencing of opinion as to these levels, but industrial agriculture has contributed to possibly 25% of the increase in CO2 in the atmosphere that is causing the global warming. Soil currently holds about three times more carbon than all the trees and biosphere in the world. And therefore, as farmers, if we're going, well, actually, Soil has got three times more carbon than the trees and the plants. It's also got three times more carbon than the atmosphere. And therefore, as farmers, unlike going from coal powered stations and gas powered electricity stations to wind and solar, farmers can not only reduce, put carbon into the soil, but they can actually start reversing by putting some of the carbon from the atmosphere down and storing it into the soil. And you'll find that there's lots and lots of projects around the world beginning to investigate what is the capability of soil to not only produce carbon positive food, but actually to start to reverse climate change.
That's absolutely brilliant and so encouraging to hear. Thank you for that. So let's just talk a little bit about just about your, because you've been part of the organic movement obviously for years now. I think you did you quote 30 years roughly?
30 years we've been, yes, it is the 30-year anniversary of the Yeo Valley brand this year. And
Oh,
also, Jarvis,
congratulations.
the 10th anniversary of Valley Fest, which you and I have
Yes.
been to on many of occasion.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're going to be celebrating the 30 years at Yeo Valley with an extra big party on Cider Down at Valley Fest this year.
Ah, oh,
30
fantastic.
years and 10 years. 10 years of Valley Fest, 30 years of Yeo
Has it
Valley.
been 10 years of Valley Fest? And I was there with you at the very, very first one before you launched Valley Fest
Yeah,
properly.
it's I think
Gosh.
we've got Sophie Ellis-Bextor this year, The Feeling, Tiny Temper,
Yeah.
and you never know,
Yeah.
Jarvis, you might come along and do a cameo.
I tell you what, it's a great lineup you've got already. I wouldn't want to spoil that, but so for those of you that don't know that are listening in. Yeo Valley produce with a guy called Luke Hazel, was a local farmer on the community farmland in Blagden. No, not Blagden. What is it? Blagden is
It's Chewstoke.
Chewstoke. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's a beautiful valley overlooking a lake, and it's called Valley Fest. It without a doubt, it's the best family food festival you can go to. We've been going every single year for the last 10 years. So that's a testament. And we take our kids who are 3 and 8, they've been every year. So you can imagine my first time we went, my wife was pregnant and we slept on the ground in a tent. So Valley Fest is the one. Get your tickets for Valley Fest. So Tim, Yeo Valley then. So I mean you're a household name. I think you sell products into something like, 50%, if not more, of the households across the country with your yogurts, butters, and milks.
Yeah.
How have you done that? Like, how's that magic happened, do you think?
I know belligerence, hard work, determination. I don't know, on a slightly serious note, when my father, had his accident, the responsibility really came down to me to save the farm. And we could have lost the place where we were brought up, we could have lost the farm. And therefore, I was a bit of a slacker at school, failed my A levels and all that sort of stuff. And then suddenly it was like one hell of a wake-up call. You just had to, there was no if, buts, maybes. You just had to knuckle down, 16-hour days for years. And it was just, you had to make it happen. And sometimes I'll try and not use the F word, but sometimes you just got to kick the door down to achieve
Yeah.
what you want to achieve. And
Yeah.
it's the amount of people who I was working with, we were a group of people who were determined to make things work. And I
Yeah.
think you can't underestimate the determination of human endeavor, really, just to get up in the morning and make it happen.
Yeah.
There are many, many, many yogurt makers from the 1970s and 80s who don't exist anymore. We were very, very, very lucky in huge numbers of times and et cetera, et cetera. But it was the group of people coming together to, make it happen. Sometimes you just got to make it happen.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. I mean, that's you know what? So many people I speak to, they've had that kind of pivotal moment in their lives where they've just had to roll the sleeves up, get on with it, and you've been a testament to that. So, firstly, congratulations. Secondly, keeping it real, because I think keeping it organic, keep driving the regenerative movement, keeping the integrity in the soils and in the business, just speaks so highly of your commitment to purpose and values. So, really, really appreciate that. Tim, we always ask our guests, it's a bit of a regular thing on the show, to come with a couple of songs that are either soundtracks to the climate crisis for them, or songs that really, really do, mean something to them. So we're going to play your first song, with it being on the half hour. Tell us the song you've chosen. Tell us who it's by, but don't tell me why you've chosen it. I'm going to ask you that after the song, and we'll hear it first. So what song are you going to play for us?
The song we're going to play first is a song called Into the Valley and by a band called The Skids.
Okay, here we go. Into the Valley by the Skids. Yeah, what a great record. That got the juices flowing too. Why did you choose that song? I mean, there's the obvious connection in Valley, but what was it for you?
Well, if you ask anybody who knows me, I spent about 6 months of my whole life interested in music, and it just happened to be late 70s, early 80s when all of that sort of punk music was, and I just, I think I'm tone deaf, and music is just not my thing. But very, very, so I've always had a thing for that, but, especially later in years, having a brand called Yo Valley. And very recently, we've managed to get Richard Jobson. He's been very kind, and he's recorded the Into the Valley is as into Yo Valley, and we're using it as an internal song, et cetera, et cetera. And he's gonna they're all going to come to Valley Fest. So introducing early 80s punk bands is obviously not necessarily the trendiest thing at the moment, but we're looking forward to getting a bit of the Skids at Valley Fest this year, and with the rewritten song, which we will now use, throughout the business whenever we want to up the tempo.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, when you've got that recording, do send it over to me and I'll make sure we play it on the show, which sounds amazing. It's funny you say you've only had about 6 months of kind of being into music in your life. Yeah, you're running, one of the most successful festivals. It's been around for 10 years. We've seen year on year, we've seen festivals, breaking up and falling apart and falling off the roster, and yet you've managed to build something in that time. I mean, the last one I went to, and as I said, we've been every year. I mean, it was just phenomenal. It was amazing, huge people, stages, ambiance. Bit of rain on the Saturday, which was a bit of a bummer. But every other year I've been, the weather's been amazing. How have you managed to do that, do you think, in a climate that where a lot of festivals are struggling, and yet you've built this thing up to it's just growing and growing every year?
I think, well, obviously every man's got a very good woman, and my wife is totally responsible for the whole of our input into Valley Fest.
Hello, Mrs. Mead, if you're out there, thank you for doing what you're doing, bringing the glitter to Tim's world.
Luke Hazel, the founder, is a doer. He can just make things happen. And we've recently partnered with the guys from Arcadia, who are sort of famous for the Afterburner stage, which they bring to Valley Fest. And the spider that they've had at Glastonbury for many years. And it is really hard. I mean, this year is, proving lots of festivals are deciding not to run again or not running this year. Ticket sales this year, we are having to pull our finger out and really go the extra distance to get people in to ensure that they come and enjoy the whole ethos of the festival is about regenerative farming. It's about linking really great food and health, So, we got some great supporters like Willida are a, been a constant supporter, as well as all the beer and cider guys in the West Country. So it's not something that you would possibly do to go in to make money. It's not something you'd go into to lower your blood pressure. But if we live in a sanitized world, going to a festival, allowing there to be a safe space for the next generations coming through to go and do what they do with cider and all that sort of stuff. I think it's great, and we'll con yeah as a brand we'll continue to support it. We take a huge wedge of our staff, about 1,000 Yeo Valley staff get to come to the festival every year. And it's just fun. I mean, we just got to live life, and having a festival every year is part of the living life bit, really.
I'm a testament to that. As I said, we've been. So if you want to go to one of the country's greatest festivals down in Somerset, valleyfest.co.uk is where you get your tickets. We're going to cut to a quick commercial break. We'll be back with Tim in a minute. I'm going to ask him a few more personal questions. We'll get into his second song. So just quick commercial break from UK Health. See you back in a sec.
The station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith, Lean Into Clean, UK Health Radio. We're talking to Tim Mead from Yo Valley. Hey, you've just managed to pop over to valleyfest.co.uk to get your tickets for this year's festival. It's going to be epic. We're going to be there. My Green Pod's been a supporter for years, so be good to see you there. Tim, so Yo Valley yogurts, is that your biggest selling product? Is that the thing that you really focus on?
Yeah, I think we're probably best known for yogurt. But I mean, life, you know, every day is a school day. You know, we're learning stuff all the time. So effectively, when we started, we were predominantly a yogurt brand. We've moved into milk and butter and things like that. And then about 2 years ago, we were going sort of the whole thing about organic farming and regenerative farming. You know, the whole emphasis of that is moving huge amounts of biodiversity back into fields, back into animals. So big business, big agribusiness has been wanting to sell the perfect cow, the perfect wheat, the perfect grass, the perfect chemical. And it's become really, you know, we rely on five crops, you know, to feed the world. So what's happening in regenerative and has been happening for a while in organic farming is everybody's realizing that you don't just pick the best grass, you pick a selection of grasses. You know, you make sure you've got genetic diversity in your herd of cows. And then we suddenly realized that, you know, the farm that we farm is we've got beef, we've got sheep, we grow oats, we grow barley, we grow wheat, we grow beans. You know, we've got all of this diversity on the farm. And therefore, what we should look to do is to sell anything that we can produce on our farm under the Yo Valley brand, and also then to support other farmers who want to farm in the method that we believe in. So on the sort of dairy side, we take milk from about 100 organic dairy farms across the UK, and they find their way through our factories and into the supermarkets. So we just thought it would be great if we could do exactly the same for the oats and the barley and the beef and the sheep, because we fundamentally believe mixed integrated rotational farming, using the sun's energy to build the fertility, to harvest the crops, and using the animals to sequester the carbon to make it more fertile. Therefore, what we should really do is try and support the farming system. Okay. And that means we got to get off our asses and sell more products to be able to allow farmers to farm in the way that we believe in. So yogurt was a beginning, but in the same way as people are now looking at the genetics of cattle, the crops that you put into the fields, etc., we're now going, well, actually, what we should really try and do, and now, you know, thank goodness, the rhetoric is now finding its way into the public debate where people are saying, well, actually, when it comes to the food that we eat, try and eat 30 different types of food every week. And, you know, and that's, so whether that's happening in the fields, whether it's happening with the animals on the farms, whether it's happening with the human diets, okay, the whole thing about eating a whole diverse range of products to get the right nutrients to make us healthy, you know, the public enemy number one for us is the ultra-processed food. You know, the most disappointing conversion of a word that has ever happened in our opinion is the word plant-based, because plant-based, you know, eating more seeds, nuts, fruit, vegetables is brilliant. Eating ultra-processed food that is made from plants is going to make us sick. And what happened is big business, big corporate, you know, whether it started in America or wherever, suddenly decided they could hijack this great word of eat more fruit and vegetables and turn it into something, you know, a little hook that everybody was like obsessed with, that it would do them good. But, you know, if the products are being made into ultra-processed food, then that is worse, in our opinion, than eating, you know, a diverse diet of, you know, nuts and seeds and, you know, dairy and beef and lamb and all that sort of stuff.
No, I'm really glad you said that, because I don't want there to be an elephant in the room. Just to be out there, I am a plant-based eater. We've been vegan in our family since my daughter, who's now 8, was born, because she was born with a dairy intolerance, so we became vegan for her. But it's interesting. I really love that you brought this subject up, because I wanted to talk to you about it. And you're absolutely right. The latest studies show that if you're eating a diverse diet of at least 30 different, I understood it to be plant-based products, but what you're saying is just good food, good healthy food, which I understand, is the best thing for your diet. And actually, if you look at cultures like, I don't know, in India, where they have a garam masala, a mixture of about 30 different spices in one curry, it's one of the healthiest nations on the planet. So totally get that. Have you seen a, well, what's the question? How much of a change have you seen in the buying of dairy products when this whole plant-based vegan oat milk, almond milk kind of, thing came into play? Like, what kind of an effect did it have on the business, if any? And what are your comments about it?
I think because our products are from, the biological organic farming system, we've seen, a huge continued support for that. I think lots. I mean, it's like anything, isn't it? A trend comes along, a fad comes along. The guys with the money guys, their eyes light up and they go,
Jump
"Ding
on it.
ding! We think we're going to make a fortune out of this." Huge numbers of companies piled into plant-based, whether it's fake meats, fake milks, fake this, whatever. I mean, I think they're having an absolute torrid time. Quite a few of the brands have just given up and said, "Whoops, that's not something that's going to happen." So it's not materialized because I guess if you believe in biological farming and you believe in grass's ability to pump sugar into the ground, to feed the microbes. And then the grass can then feed the large herbivores to build the fertility. If naturally, you could get a field of wheat or a field of oats growing in the wild, but you won't because it's dependent on, you won't get that concentration of those crops because it's dependent on the fertility building of the grasses of the world. The plains of Africa, the plains of America were built. The fertility was built due to the symbiotic relationship between the large herbivores, the grass, and the microbes in the soil. And, our fundamental belief is that all of life is really sustained by that. So if we think we can remove ourselves from that process and have a ecosystem that is not a natural ecosystem, then I just don't believe that. And that's where we will differ from other views of opinion.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely, I would absolutely wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think nature is giving us, all the opportunities to go, guys, come on, you've messed up here, but I'm going to give you a bit of an opportunity to turn things around. But if you don't, I'm probably going to have to do that myself, and you will become a parasite rather than a support. So we're kind of in that process, aren't we?
And I don't think, the whole diversity of all the nutrients and the trace elements that it has on our immune system and all this sort of stuff. I mean, if we think that we can, take a whole raft of foodstuffs that have been generated for, hundreds of thousands of years, have been generating those nutrition, and try and have a one diet fits all for the world, at the end of the day, we want the human race to have a diverse diet because it makes us more resilient. So we want some people to have a meater, a heavier meat diet, some people to have a vegetarian vegan diet, some people have a fish-based diet, because that way the diversity of the human population will be more resilient to lots of things that are going to come down the track in the future. There's very good, I mean, this is probably for health radio, it's probably a little bit too far, but the imposition of a meat-free diet, when sometimes there are certain people and parts of the population that are reliant on those nutrients to have the health that they require, is bordering on sort of, I think the phrase, and this was not my phrase, but it's bordering on nutritional imperialism to subject people to something and a diet that obviously only a certain number of people in the world have got access to and afford. So, we should be looking at every opportunity and broadening our knowledge and understanding of all sorts of nutrition, and just keep ensuring that we have diversity of food, diversity of genetics, diversity of crops, and then you end up with a healthier, more resilient world and population.
Yeah, no, I think that's beautifully said, and I wholeheartedly agree. When we stayed with the Maasai for a story that we're doing with My Green Pod, they literally lived on blood mixed with milk. Like that was how they got their vitamins and minerals that they needed, because that's all they could live on.
Tricky one for a vegan, you know, meat, blood,
Yeah, it was.
meat, blood and milk.
We
They
didn't have any
did.
of that,
Have you lost
thankfully,
a few
but.
pounds since then?
Tim, we're running out of time. I could talk to you all day because it's so insightful. I'm sure our listeners will be feeling well more clued up and informed about our conversation. So thank you. I do want to get your second song in, and then, well, it's going to be the end of the show. So I think, Tim, is there anything that you'd like to say that you haven't said that can just give you this opportunity to? We'll play your second song, and then we'll have to love you and leave you. But anything I might have missed, anything you would have liked me to have asked you that I haven't asked?
I would think from our perspective as a business, the song that I've chosen has its heritage in a protest song. For Yeo Valley, whether it's climate, whether it's biodiversity loss, the biggest single issue to our business is it's our job to produce natural, healthy food, and the enemy there is ultra-processed food. So whilst they would not, when this song was written, I think it was 1967, they would not have, worked out that ultra processed food was going to be the greatest enemy that is going to be facing, the Northern Hemisphere in terms of America and the UK. But for us, this is a protest song, and our protest against the world is the increase of ultra processed food that is being forced upon us as a population.
Well, I absolutely back that, and I know that our listeners will be backing that. So you can support Tim, and you can support Yeo Valley, and buying into products that are really supporting ecosystems to regenerate has got to be the way forward. So think about where you're putting your money. Tim, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure and a joy to have you. I look forward to dancing with you at Valley Fest. Tell us the song you've chosen. And who it's by, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
The song is "What a Wonderful World," Louis Armstrong.
Yay! We'll play out on this song. There might be a couple of minutes at the end to play a bit of Save the World by yours truly, Jarvis Smith. But this is Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Thank you ever so much, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you all again next week. Tim, it's been a pleasure. Thanks to UK Health team. Thanks to our producer. Thank you all. Have a great week.